All right. Thank you very much, Duncan and Joe, for that. That was very beautiful, wasn't it? Well done. Extremely well done. We are moving into a serious situation in the world that has crept up on us. And a lot of people, while giving some lip service to it, have not understood the consequences of the times that we are about to face. A lot of things are happening that we may not be aware of how they will affect us, and also how it may fulfill the prophecies that we know are going to come to pass in the Bible. I want to show that to you today. Just last week, the federal government rolled out, the week before that, rolled out a $10 billion water management project to ensure that Australia would have the water it needs in the decades to come. We have to manage the water we have. Now, what is clear to us is that the problem is with us now, and it is not getting any better. In fact, it is getting worse. We see that in our own state, where the dams are down below 20% average, or right at 20%, and getting lower, and we're having no appreciable rainfall in the catchment areas. I don't know what you might want to make of that, but it seems to be everywhere else but the areas where we seem to need them for the catchment areas. And whether you want to or not, you will be drinking water that is derived from wastewater and pumped back into our water system. And now that's a fact of life. However, in many, many other places, it's already happening. Now it's going to happen here. When we thought we had all the water we need, now we find we don't have all the water we need due to two factors. Number one, the increase in demand, but also the lack of supply. That is, no pun intended, drying up. And we're just simply not getting what we need to have. We don't have the water to sustain the population in our major metropolitan areas like we used to. You remember all the water we used to get in Brisbane. You remember this. Some of you have memories of this. Some of you have memories of even the floods that used to come more than once a year. They don't come anymore. Haven't come for quite some time. What about in Melbourne? Remember all the rain we used to get in Melbourne? Melbourne's been in the drought for quite some time, and they are very, very concerned as to what takes place there. I've got a few words to say about Sydney and some of the predictions about Sydney as a result of what some of our experts are saying. But a report came out only last night, put out by the United Nations. It was years in the making, put together by hundreds, if I'm not mistaken, more than that, thousands perhaps of scientists from all of the major countries in the world who issued a report that contained very, very dire predictions and said that global warming is causing the problems we have, and global warming is man-made. The way they put it is 90% of what we have in terms of global warming, and therefore the consequences of global warming, are because we are here. So we are, in that sense, our own worst enemy. Our need for energy, our need, or let's say the desire for a prosperous lifestyle that uses fossil fuels, to sustain that prosperous lifestyle, is the single greatest cause for global warming. Now, we're not the only nation that contributes to that, though it's been said that Australia contributes more per capita than most other nations. All nations contribute to that. Now, if you want to take into consideration all of the coal that we mine and ship to other countries who themselves burn it for their industry, and you lay that on us, well, then yeah, we would come out. But I'm not so sure if they count it in that way. But we do, per capita, in any case, use a lot of energy. And of course, they are going to alternate forms of energy, which of course is a step perhaps in the right direction. There's a lot of controversy about that. Now, this particular paper gives warnings that would bring every nation then into focus as to what it does. Let me just say, there was so much controversy about this. It took them so long to put it together. But in the report, they agreed it's going to affect hundreds of millions of people. And millions will actually die as a result of this. And some people say even more than that, for that matter. And I've got a few quotes here from some of our own experts right here in Australia. But it's kind of doubtful how governments who have argued over this and made politics of the issue of global warming, and this is what kind of turns you off. They may use it as a political point, and they make politics out of this very, very serious issue on one hand, which naturally makes it to where the opposition will take the opposing view. And so you're going back, and this is an issue for politics. Nothing gets solved that way, or very little gets solved until you get some very serious things begin to happen. Well, some very, very serious things have already begun to happen, which we'll talk about here in just a moment. It gives warnings. However, there are other experts who say it is much worse than what this paper actually puts out. Now, you've heard it all on the news. It's widely reported. It's been the source the last 2 days of a great deal of attention. And they had to put it in such a way where it will be accepted by politicians. And politicians want to be reelected. And so they got to be very careful as to what they say, what they are prepared to allow, and everybody has certain interests that they want to protect. And some of those interests are actually heavy contributors to the gases that cause the global warming. And it's going to be very, very difficult to turn all of this around, but it's going to take a lot of cooperation on the part of people to do this. And, of course, they have to be really not only talked into it, they have to be frightened into it. Now, Australia's Professor Tim Flannery, who wrote The Future Eaters and The Weathermakers, among others, has made certain claims. He just simply says half of Australia's tropical rainforest is expected to be destroyed if global temperatures rise by only 1 degree. They're saying that the temperature, this is 1 degree Celsius, they say that the temperatures by the end of the century we are now in, the century we've just begun, will rise by 3 degrees, which will be which will result in quite a few disasters. He says visitors traveling to Queensland by 2050 may see not the Great Barrier Reef, but the Great Stumpy Reef. In other words, there's only stumps left. The Barrier Reef will have died by that time, and all that's left is the stumps of the reef. And we are going to be held then responsible by the generation who will come after. And in other words, it's our children, it's our grandchildren who will have to face a very diminished way of life as a result of what we're doing now. And it's not that the resources aren't there, it's the fact that we are using them and the use of those resources are causing and will cause an enormous amount of problems in the decades to come. And so professor goes on to say they will tell their, what will they tell their children about their increasingly larger homes, the four-wheel drives, and their refusal then to do very much about it when they could. It does take a great deal of will, political will, desire. You have to be willing to let's say lead the way, as it were. You got to be willing to do what you have to do right now. Don't worry about what your economy is going to be. That's one of the big things is, okay, how is our economy going to be sustained? Because it is sustained and based on so many of the so many of the things that we've come to have right now, anywhere from airplane travel to car travel. for instance. And in many other ways in which we do things, the way we manufacture things, is a contributor to the global warming. This is already having its effect in various parts of the world. The temperature is dropping. There is a huge melt of glaciers and the ice that forms glaciers at a faster rate than ever thought before. The seas have already risen by 3 centimeters per year in more recent years. They are expecting by the end of the century that the seas will rise by 75 meters. I'm sorry, 75 centimeters. Centimeters, that's kind of, yeah, we've got a Noah's Ark again. no, wait. No, that's pretty. That's, look, you're looking at 2 feet, aren't you? A little bit better than 2 feet. I've got to go back to the Old English so far as that's concerned so I can figure out how high 75 centimeters will be. As a result of what has already happened, and this is something that people are not generally told unless you're really into this particular subject, that, for instance, there have been islands in low-lying land at the mouth of the Ganges River where thousands of people used to live is now overrun by water. That is the rising sea. They've had to move off that land. 1,000 square kilometers of good soil has, I mean, they just can't use it anymore. Now, this is vital, of course, in areas like that, to be able not only to live on, but to actually use it to grow their food on this land. Now it's simply not there anymore. And as it does continue to rise, more and more land will be lost. A lot of our population of the world, including right here in Australia, is coastal. And so as a result, as the water level rises, then along with that, with the ever-increasing larger storms that we're having, we've already had them this past year in the Northern Hemisphere. Huge storms that measure larger than storms than we've known before, doing tremendous damage, such as Katrina that hit New Orleans and the south coast of Louisiana and Mississippi. That when these kind of storms hit places that are already at marginal situations with the sea, then the damage is so much more. So you have things begin to multiply like that. This is, of course, only the beginning. All of this will have a diminished effect on Australian agricultural production, as we are used to having a certain amount of moisture in order to produce our crops. Australia, then, which has traditionally been an exporter, a large exporter of food to the world, simply has had the capacity to export food to the world considerably diminished. At a time when the world will need more food, the capacity then of the world not only to be fed from places like Australia but also other places too will be severely compromised. And of course, not to mention that the food production areas for the millions and hundreds of millions of people where they live will be also unusable and will be in areas where they have been compromised also by salt water close to the sea will also render them unusual. Sydney, for instance, here's what the CSIRO says. They're making certain predictions about, say, the city of Sydney, just to kind of bring it home to us a little bit. The average annual temperatures in Sydney will rise from a current 78.8 degrees, this is Fahrenheit now, 78.8 degrees to around 88 degrees Fahrenheit. That's almost an increase of 10 degrees Fahrenheit by the year 2070. For current climate trends, if current climate trends continue, summer temperatures in Sydney's landlocked suburbs, which often top 95 degrees, could rise by as much as 13 degrees. It is predicted that heat-related deaths of people over 65 will increase to over 1,300 a year by 2050, from the current average of 176 per year that's happening now. By 2070, Sydney could be in drought for 9 out of every 10 years, instead of the current average 3 out of every 10 years. That's quite an amazing fact. You know, you can get these facts yourself. You can check in. You can just do a search, and, you know, they're there. People are saying them. They're coming out more and more and saying them publicly now in interviews, simply because there is an interest by the press for a lot of this information. Such trends would also increase evaporation. It would increase heat waves. It would increase extreme winds, and there would be a far greater fire risk, this particular report said from the CSIRO. It also said that hotter temperatures would have significant effects on the ecosystem around Sydney, threatening some already endangered plant species and the animals that feed on them. Rising sea levels could also destroy the natural habitats of many species. I heard also another commentator, actually a person who spoke on this particular report, did say that you could have in some areas up to from 4 out of 10 now current species would no longer exist. Or in some areas up to 6 out of 10 species of animals would no longer exist as a result of climate change. Australia, it went on to say, is a major exporter and consumer of carbon dioxide emitting fossil fuels. Australia rates as one of the world's worst greenhouse gas producers per capita. So, okay, we're all into it, I suppose. And the whole world is, too, for that matter. If you want to go down from nation after nation, you'll find everybody is into this and everybody is making their contribution. Now, there is some things that occurred only this past year we ought to take note of that they spoke of. And to show that the effects or the consequences of global warming is not just for the future, it is here now. It has already begun. We have entered the time of the mega fires. I don't know if you've heard that term. There's such a thing as mega fires. Fires that are simply too large to contain by the fire services that we currently have. They simply don't have the ability to deal with it. We simply have to wait for a weather change, or they burn themselves out into the sea. We do not have the means to deal with these kinds of fires. We had this in Victoria this year. We had mega fires. We had record heat temperatures in Victoria this year. The fires were put out because of a weather change and rain. They were beyond what we could handle. That's what the fire service said. In the Northern Hemisphere, they had, prior to our summer here, they also had in North America, record-breaking heat. They also had record-breaking heat waves in Europe this past year. They had fires in the United States, once again, mega fires, to which they had very, very difficult times with in being able to simply deal to deal with it. Now, that's a very interesting situation. I'll refer to that in a moment when I show you a few things in the Bible, because the Bible speaks of some of the things that we're now talking about. Now, you may have a diminishing El Nino effect on our weather this year. We may have an increasing amount of rain for the first 6 months of this year, or maybe even the whole of this year for that matter. And the dams may become partially filled right now, but we are in a global warming trend in any case. We're talking about longer term. And while we may have breaks in the drought. We're going to have longer periods of drought, and they will be more often. As the one prediction the CISRO said, here we have, by the end of the century, we'll have drought in that area 9 out of the 10 years, rather than 3 out of the 10 that we now have. Then we have something, let me just label this problem, the fresh water problem, which I've already alluded to. We have an increasing inability to sustain ourselves with fresh water to the point that we now have to use recycled water. Whether you want to or not, we're going to have it. You didn't vote for it, doesn't matter. You're going to have it. It's going to be a fact of life right here, right in Brisbane, beginning at some point, maybe next year or the year after next when they get the whole thing set up. The lack of vegetation to be able to hold moisture in our soils, the vegetation that's going to be decreased as a result of fires, as a result of simply the lack of rain, and what rain and moisture we do get, that water and what water we do have hopefully is not polluted. The demands on the existing fresh water supplies, in addition, then the need for fresh water for industry, for so our economies can prosper, so we will have the money to deal with all the problems in the first place, will all converge to create a problem of enormous difficulty, not only for us, but for the entirety of the human race. Now, let me just give you a few other things, and I want to show you some things in the Bible. Dr. Pearson gave an interview on Nightline from the CSIRO, seems to be very versed in these issues. And, of course, as I said, they're interviewing people now as a result of this report. They're trying to find out what is going to happen, what do they say, and we're now beginning to hear things that were never said before. Australia will see the drying of the southern part of the country. Temperatures will rise 2 to 4 degrees by the end of the century. Was his prediction, storm patterns will change, and storm patterns will go further south and miss the area, the vital area, on a line from Sydney to Perth. It's going to begin to miss the traditional rainfall, and it will go further and further south, which means Melbourne is going to miss it. And it's going to, in the Southern Ocean, we'll get the rain. Can't plant very much there. But that's simply the way the pattern will go. There will be higher temperatures even further north, which means more evaporation and loss of water. There are areas that will get more rainfall than they normally get, that they don't know exactly where they will be, nor how much. And, of course, that could lead to even, let's say, a lot of other costs involved in dealing with that sort of thing. Sea levels are rising now at the top end of the projections made 5 or 6 years ago. And then when you do have storms, you have an inundation of salt water with fresh water along these coastal areas. Residential Australia will be affected by the loss of rainfall, and the increased severity of the storms. We are a coastal community. We have enormous development along the coast, and we won't be able to handle the storm intensities and the erosion that will come as a result of that. We're going to have some difficulty perhaps with our infrastructure and dealing with a lot of the water runoff. There are just a number of ramifications of the global warming on our coastal communities. So far as the rest of the world is concerned, as Dr. Pearson said, polar ice caps have a high probability of disappearing by 2050. You ever hear that? I haven't. First time I'm hearing this. Now we're being told. I couldn't believe it. I said, did he really say that? Yeah, he said that. Polar ice caps have a high probability of disappearing by 2050. The thickness, he says, has decreased by half already. There is so much lost glaciation in vital areas of the world that traditionally support so many, let's say, hundreds of millions of people, such as the huge ice and snow sheet in the Tibet Plateau, which holds an enormous amount of water in the form of ice and snow, and then the glacier melt from all of that supplies the rivers that come down, which then supplies the water for so many hundreds of millions of people down from these plateaus. Tibet and the Andes, two places, for instance, where you have rapid melting of these ice sheets. Hundreds of millions of people are affected or will be affected by this. Everyone on the earth will have a different capacity to respond. Some will not be able to respond the way some of the more affluent Western countries will, simply because they don't have the money, they don't have the economy to deal with it. We might be able to deal with it to some extent, as we are now doing when we roll out a $10 billion water management plan. Other countries simply are not able to do that kind of a thing, so what will they do? How many people are we going to lose? Will those people migrate? Will they resort to anarchy and disobedience? How many will there be? Hundreds of millions, perhaps. This one CSIRO, Dr. Pearson, said it is more like billions of people will be affected by lack of water. Let me just tell you something. The Earth is adding right now to its population every 8 years 1 billion people. Okay. I hope we can understand now where this is going and how the Bible can talk about a third of the people being killed in such and such a circumstance. Because they're there. It's quite amazing. I mean, if they weren't there, not that many as a percentage would be killed. I think we understand that. It may be a kind of a terrible thing to talk about this, but let me tell you something. Scientists, think tanks, universities have talked about this. They've talked about it for decades. They know. They've got the prediction. I saw in California, we saw it a couple of times because they ran it twice. A professor, and he's a biology professor in his class, did the figures, did the numbers. It was a part. He was a part of a group that did this, and they took all the numbers in terms of population, in terms of demand, in terms of the ability of the Earth to support itself with all kinds of things. Anywhere from fuel to food to water, medicine, et cetera, et cetera. And at the year 2014, all of these lines converge, and it's where the world simply will not have the capacity to keep going. Big, big things start to happen just around that time. That's 1 billion more people between now and 2014. Than exist right now. That's where we're at. They don't know what really is going to happen. They can only guess. Now, everything that we're doing will come into play in about 20 years. That is, the rate at which we can implement solutions to control the greenhouse gases and to control global warming will start to have an effect in about 20 years. Not enough to appreciably help the problem. We have a problem that are not only decades ahead of us, but centuries ahead of us, as they say. It is very, very serious. This Dr. Pearson, when asked, what is your response to this report? And not only this report, but the whole picture as you see it, he says, my response is depression. Depression. He does not see that we have a capacity to deal with the problem the way it needs to be dealt with. He would like to think that we are wrong in our predictions, but we are not. And he's not at all optimistic that we will deal with the problem in time. Now, God was able to make these predictions with stunning accuracy as to what will happen. I want to turn to one place where we ought to take a look and examine it and rethink perhaps one or two aspects about the prophecies in the book of Revelation, especially chapter 8. where we've always understood that the ecology here is going to be under an enormous threat, and as a result, human life also. We see here only a result. That's all we're told. We don't see what leads up to it, and of course this becomes part of the point I want to make in just a moment. But here you have seven trumpets that are about to be blown. These seven trumpets are the seven trumpets of God to announce that certain events are to occur. And these are events that are to occur on the earth. However, as they are described, not all are occurring on the earth. But let's notice in verse 7, I want to skip some of this and get right into it. It says, "The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth. And a third of the trees were burned up, and all of the green grass was burned up." We have an enormous ecological disaster here. What he saw in terms of the hail and the fire mingled with blood thrown to the earth is what he saw happening in heaven. The result is then a third of the trees burned up and all the green grass was burned up. Remember the megafires. I said, they're saying this. You can check this out for yourself. You know, just get on the websites and start plugging in some words, megafires, and see what you come up with. You're going to come up with a whole list. Then, where we are have now entered the time of the megafires. Here's what it says: a third of the trees were burned up. All the green grass was burned. Does that mean literally burned up, or does that mean simply they are so dried up? I walked out of my lawn before we had this last rain, and I said, "This grass sure is burned up." Not literally so, but it is so dried and so burned it had no moisture in it whatsoever. I didn't know whether it would ever recover, but it bit of rain and it did seem to come out again. Now, this is a result or a consequence. This is a picture of something that it just simply shows here. Now, there are some other things. I'm going to go through the next few here in just a moment. But here's what I want to ask you this. We tend to take what we read here and we put it in a nice, neat little package. Remember, we've got the first six seals, first six seals. Then we got the trumpets. And then we got the final plagues of God. And yes, that does give us a comprehension. Not necessarily a time frame. One might say an overview, a picture, perhaps some structure, as it were, to the events of the end time as it's all going to happen and to occur in what John saw as the day of the Lord. The Lord's day, when all of these things are going to begin to come about. Now, we tend to look at it this way, that a trumpet's blown, and all of a sudden this happens. Then you have another trumpet blows, and then the next thing happens. And then you have another trumpet, and then this happens. And it's all rather structured, very clear, very nice and tidy, as it were. And we have our little charts that we put together. I think we ought to start looking at this as maybe an overall picture of all the things that are going to happen. Oh, yes, there is an order to things, and there's a reason why there is an order. For instance, we have the first six seals. For instance, our conditions. They're a condition that Christ describes. But when he talks about here these angels sounding, we say, that's the day of the Lord, and that is true. And I've preached on that, and I've explained it exactly that way. But that's not to say that certain conditions do not precede that, and that you begin to have certain things that begin to happen before the ultimate result of what you see here described. The point I'm simply making is this. We're now seeing things in the world, if only for the past year, but I'm also suggesting that it had its roots before that, as one could imagine. And these are what will build up to then the larger catastrophic events that are described here in terms of the trumpets. In other words, it just doesn't start at a certain point, everything all nice and tidy the last 3.5 years of this age. You got something that starts long before then. I'm submitting to you, it started. That's what I'm saying. It started. We're in it. You're starting to see these things beginning to take place. We haven't lost a third. But you see then how it could happen. And how, if the conditions continue, that, okay, now we're in it. We're into the phases. We're into the times when these things are going to now culminate. And what you read here is a very, very serious times. And it doesn't get better. It gets worse. Now let's get on to the second trumpet. The second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. This does not mean it literally became blood. The Bible describes similar things like it became as blood. The idea is basically the same, in that a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. And so we have a huge ecological disaster in the sea itself. The sea feeds a lot of people. I enjoy my fish. You should enjoy it while you can. But the Japanese are finding they've got a range far and wide right now, even into Australian waters for that matter, and even begin to harvest animals from the sea that we don't want them to. But there's more and more stress on the sea. Besides that, there are other issues of the sea that you and I don't even know about, nor could imagine, that could result in this type of thing where it cannot sustain life as we know it. A third of the living creatures in the sea die. As I already referred to you before about the coral, which is an indication of the condition of the oceans now, in their likelihood in the warming trend, that they're not going to remain alive either, which of course is a great source to so much of our sea life around Australia. The third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. It fell on the third part of the rivers and on the springs of waters. And the name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water, and it was made bitter. Here we have fresh water then being threatened. Fresh water, in which we are now recycling, are going to, right here in our country. And you don't know what's in it. There's a lot of hormones that are in our fresh water that people take all the time. Well, let me just be frank. You drink the water, guys, you could be on the pill too. Okay. All right, I'm just telling you how it is. All right. Now, this is it. They don't take that out of the water. Now, but it's also compromised. When you lose your vegetation, you're going to have a hard time sustaining the fresh water supply, because that's the filtration system for the fresh water. And besides that, it doesn't hold the moisture. It runs off. It's gone. We just have a very, very difficult time of it here. As a result of the heating trend, it's going to affect the fresh water. So one thing comes after the other. Then the third angel sounds, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened, and a third of the day did not shine, likewise the night. All right, what do we have here? You ever see how much carbon is put into the air as a result of burning? And that will burn, as has been previously said in some of these previous, you know, a lot of burning. And it's just an enormous amount. We're not even talking about any volcanoes. We're simply talking about carbon as a result of the burning from not fossil fuels, but from the vegetation that is on fire. Okay, I'm just giving you a possible scenario, that's all, because the Bible says, hey, we gotta this thing's going to be kind of darkened. Only one good thing's going to come out of this kind of carbon cover. It slows down global warming just a tad. That's all. Bad trade-off, but anyway, that's what happens. That's what they say. Now, you have here then, in chapter 9, you have what we suspect is the beast who's going to come out of the bottomless pit, will be able to have the technology to conquer large portions of the world, to take control over them for whatever reasons it has to take control, and one suspects because of the, perhaps even the anarchy that will exist at the time. Then you have, as a response to that, the sixth trumpet. You have now the sixth angel sounding, in which angels are released from the great river Euphrates. And they are released, in which people then are then moved, stirred up, enormous masses of people in terms of warfare, moving for the purpose of warfare. It says they are released to kill a third of mankind. And so you are going to have other nations then probably from the east who are going to be able to mobilize huge numbers, 200 million horsemen, as it says here, was the number of them. And by these, a third of mankind is killed, as it says twice here in this particular plague, which seems to indicate that it's really going to happen. You have some tremendous ramifications as it builds, as it accumulates, as things begin to unfold. And scientists, while they may be able to give you some kind of an idea as to what will happen, they really don't know the full scope of how it is going to happen. The Bible gives you this. The Bible gives you this. It's telling you beforehand. Man officially together as people cooperating have now only begun to agree that it's going to happen to the limited extent that they say it's going to happen. I don't know if they included Revelation 8 in their studies. I rather doubt it. Okay. Let's answer one or two more questions here. God has always spoke to people through the weather. Put it as succinctly as I can. Where he makes known his pleasure or, alternatively, his displeasure as a result of the way he sends rain. Leviticus 26:4. Leviticus 26:4, verses 3 and 4, actually. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them, then I will give you rain in its season. The land shall yield its produce, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Here we have a very prosperous picture here, and it is important to have rain in due season. The land does yield the increase it's intended to, and is very productive. Deuteronomy 11:14, the connection is so clear in terms of God does send a message, a clear message, not only to his people, but here's the way he is now speaking to the world who have not listened to him. They have to understand there is a God who means everything he says. Deuteronomy 11, verse 13. It shall be that if you earnestly obey my commandments, which I command you today, to love the Lord your God and serve him with all your heart, with all your soul, then I will give you the rain for your land in its season, the early rain and the latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine, and your oil. There's nothing to restrain or restrict you in terms of the weather, but it will cooperate completely with what you have to do to have an abundant harvest. And I will send grass in your fields for your livestock, that you may eat and be filled. Take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them, lest the Lord's anger be aroused against you, and he shut up the heavens so that there be no rain, and the land yield no produce, and you perish quickly from the good land which the Lord has given you. Now, I understand he's saying that more specifically to his own people. However, it's a principle by which, as we're going to see, he will speak to people in general. 1 Kings chapter 8, verses 35 and 36. 1 Kings 8, 35 and 36. When the heavens are shut up and there is no rain because they have sinned against you. This is Solomon praying at the dedication of the temple. When they pray toward this place and confess your name and turn from their sin because you afflict them, then hear in heaven and forgive the sin of your servants, your people Israel, that you may teach them the good way in which they should walk, and send rain on your land which you have given to your people as an inheritance. Now, it shows then, when people turn to him, there is also a good response, very clearly. 2 Chronicles 6, 26 and 27, he says the same thing. It's just a repeat of that. Rain sent by God or withheld by God is to show people that he is God and that he has to be listened to. There comes a time when God will intervene and step in. We might say, indeed, this is something that we are doing to ourselves, and you would be correct. There is a reason as to why it is all happening. We can point to the fact that we have chose to live in such a way in which we have not managed the earth very well, nor have we managed ourselves very well. And God is telling us that you are now going to be in a situation where you have to start listening to me. Up until now, we have had some small measure of success, if I can put it that way, to deal with the consequences of the problems we have caused. Whether it is to produce enough food in one area of the world to supply another, whether it is to produce enough vaccines to take care of certain diseases, whether it is to deal with certain outlaw governments, as it were, though we're having a problem with that. And to hear it said that man has the ability to overcome a lot of the problems or the consequences that man has brought upon himself. He does. To some limited extent. But don't let that fool you into thinking that we have solved our problem, because we haven't. This is one of the things Herbert Armstrong said, and I've heard him for decades say this: we do not know how to solve our problems. And we can only deal with the consequences, and to alleviate the consequences, only to find that we have not really solved the problem because the stress on us has continued as a result of not turning to him, Now, we are going to be placed in a position, I'm not only talking about our nations, but the entire world. We're going to be placed in a position to which there is no solution. Here's where we're at. What you're beginning to see is a situation that man is now into, to where all of the resources that he has cannot solve this problem. Rain is something, if you don't get it, there's not a lot you can do about it unless you have another source of water. And so the government says, we've got $10 billion for that. And I think all of us will say, well, let's just see how far that's going to go. Now, there are some facts of the matter that we all have to come to face. The world doesn't want to face them, and I suspect this may be why the full force of this has not come out up until now, and still hasn't, for that matter. You still don't have it in this report, because they can't even begin to imagine the terrible effects that we are going to experience in beginning 10 years or less from now. Now, I want to turn to 1 Kings 17, verse 1. 1 Kings 17, verse 1. And Elijah the Tishbite of the inhabitants of Gilead said to Ahab, the king. He comes out of the desert, walks up to the king who's got an army behind him, powerful king, and says this to him, as the Lord God of Israel lives before whom I stand, there shall not be dew or rain these years except at my word. Now that gets your attention. Right there. Simply not going to happen. Now I don't care if you are king. I don't care how much, how many resources you have at your disposal. I don't care how good your economy is. When that happens, you're in trouble. And that's what he told him. In the first few days, the first few weeks, the first few months, it may not have made a lot of difference. But as time went on, they were looking for grass to keep a few horses alive. That's where they were. People were dying. Hundreds by the thousands. As he found a widow who said, I have my last meal here, and you want me to give it to you? I'm saving it so me and my child can eat it, and when we do, then we'll die. That was the situation they were in. In Zechariah chapter 14, verse 17, and this is very interesting. Zechariah 14, verse 17. For God will make clear what his will is to people who simply refuse to listen. And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there shall be no rain. It says, if they do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, they shall have no rain. Verse 18. Does God speak through the rain? You make up your own mind. But I think we've read enough scriptures that he is prepared to show his pleasure or his displeasure by giving it or withholding it to show people what he says and that he means exactly what he says. And he is going to carry out precisely what he says he will do. Now, there are plenty of warnings. And one should ask questions. One should take a good look at where he's at and who he is. And you should just simply do this and ask, okay, what is God telling us? Because God is always telling us what he wants us to know. Now, there's It's something I wanted to point out to you. One way so that you will watch, and we should watch. We can't let this day come upon us unawares and all of a sudden we find ourselves in it. We find ourselves in it because of things that are already happening. As I'm suggesting, we're in it. Okay, it's starting. We are at the start. But what we see, is what we read in the Bible, is going to happen. Is there anything you ought to do? I think there are some things reasonably you could do. Ultimately, that even what you might do now in terms of putting up a water tank or two or whatever it is only going to have a certain effect. God is going to have to save, and He is able to save to the uttermost, as it were, those who are faithful to Him, those who do watch and pray. And that's what we're looking for. But we ought to be forewarned at least, well, where are we and why are these things happening? And we can't just discount them. I believe to some extent they have been minimized and discounted for years. And we kind of wonder, well, maybe are these things really going to happen? Are they not going to happen or what? And maybe it was all wrong. I've had a friend of mine, lives not too far from here, as from where we stand. Today he believes Herbert Armstrong is about the worst false prophet ever was, because he was wrong. You better rethink that one, because everything he says, he just simply got it right out of the Bible. He says it's going to happen. 1972 ain't here yet. Will be, but it's just not here yet, that's all. But we had a clear picture, and we ought to take maybe a little longer view of the end time and the way it all comes about, the way it all transpires, but yet to know that it's going to happen inexorably, in hopes that what? The people will turn, people will repent as much as possible to escape what is going to happen to our planet in the very near future. Thank you very much for coming today. Last good water there is.